Blog Talk Radio.
The HD View.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Actually, it's Thursday. I had my days mixed up. And thank you for tuning in to Help for HD, the HD View. This is your host, Melissa Biliardi. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. And I always say, please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of our upcoming episodes. Thank you, 82,000 listeners, for tuning in. Amazing. We have two incredible special guests tonight. Karen Hodgman is a senior project manager at the Clinical Trials Coordinator Center at the University of Rochester. She has 25 years plus experience managing clinical trials. Great lady. Bonnie L. Henning, she is, and this is very confusing, and I'll have her explain this to you, but she is an MSW, LCSW, QCSW, DCSW, and Associate Director at UConn Health Center Huntington's Disease Program in Connecticut. She has 15 years at Connecticut and more than 25 years experience in clinical therapist as a clinical therapist. We are so lucky to have these two ladies on tonight. We are going to talk about See, everybody loves you.
That's right. Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, Christy, creatine safety, tolerability, efficacy in Huntington's disease is the topic tonight. And the mission is to provide patients and family with information about Christy tonight. This is our mission. The discussion today will be focused on providing a brief overview of the study, allowing for an informal discussion about study participation and providing information about how individuals with HD and their caregivers can participate in clinical trials. So, Karen and Bonnie, welcome to the show. We are so honored to have you here.
Thank you, Karen.
Tell us, who are our sponsors?
Sure, thank you. The study is sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medication. The imaging portion of the study is sponsored through the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. And the study is conducted by the Huntington Study Group, which is a multinational group of Huntington disease specialists that seek to develop new treatments for HD.
Awesome. Okay, so tell us about CREST-E. You know, CREST-E's been around for a little bit, but we've got some new information on CREST-E, and we're going to be able to expedite it. So tell us first, what is CREST-E, what is a Phase 3 clinical research study?
Well, a Phase 3 clinical research study is a study that's looking at how the drug, and in particular in CREST-E, is looking at two things. It's looking at how well the subject or the participants in the study tolerate the study drug. It's designed to look at how the doses of creatine slow down the worsening of HD symptoms that occur over time. And we're also looking at long-term use, at how creatine affects the body and the brain.
What does happen in the brain exactly?
Well,
why do we think that the creatine will help?
Brain cell injury and death is believed to be the cause of symptoms of HD, as we all know. A major factor in brain cell death is thought to be the lack of normal levels of cell energy and the generation of harmful brain substances. So creatine is a nutritional supplement believed to help the body produce energy. High doses of creatine may help protect brain cells in people who have HD by improving the levels of cell energy. Creatine has been studied at higher doses in a small number of HD patients who have taken that for over 3 years. It's not known yet if creatine will help people with HD, and creatine has not been approved for treating any disease by regulatory authorities, including the FDA.
Yes, we have to go by the FDA, don't we?
Yes.
They have a lot of regulations on that. So how many centers do we have? And this is a global one, right?
This is a global study. Yes. It's, mm-hmm. Yep. It's conducted in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the U.S. We have 47 sites or centers participating at this juncture. And the goal is to enroll 650 participants. Everybody will be enrolled by December 2014, and all study participant assessments will be completed by January 2016. As of today, so far, we have 492 subjects and 340 caregivers enrolled in the study. Yay! We only need 158 more subjects. Yeah. We only have 158 more subjects to reach the goal of 650, so we're doing really well.
So tell us how long – I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit because I wanted to explain to everybody how long the study lasts and why are you changing the enrollment duration in September of this year.
Well, the study initially when the study was implemented, the subjects were on the study for a long time. They presented to the clinic for in-person visits. There were quite a few of them. And there were some things that participants or potential participants, too many visits, people didn't want to come into the visit. So we advocated to our sites to provide us with feedback on how we could improve the study and make it more interesting for people to participate. So we met with our steering committees as well as our data safety monitoring boards and our biostatistics groups, and those are the people that analyze the data at the end of the study. We met with them and we discussed strategies to continue the study, but continue the study perhaps in a shorter period or in providing, but still being able to provide the outcome that's required per our protocol. So, right. So what we did is we lengthened the study. We lengthened the study, and we actually allow subjects who came into the study in the beginning of the study. So anybody who was enrolled earlier in the study from December 31st, 2011 through December 31st, 2012 can be enrolled in what we're calling an extended maintenance phase, which is actually an extension of the study. So those individuals that are interested would consent to participate in this portion of the study, and then we would collect additional data on them. So there's additional data points that we capture, and we're actually, the particular data point we're looking at is how well the subject is functioning. So how well is the participant functioning? Using that information, we were able to lengthen the time of the study and still obtain the data that's required, lengthen the study, and still produce the data that's required.
Wow. So what kind of testing? Okay, so let's back up again back again and talk about what exactly happens when a person enrolls in CREST-E. Is there a blood test, imaging? What happens?
Sure. Well, first thing that we would do is we would bring the potential participant into the clinic, and they would meet with the study coordinator and the investigator conducting the study, and we would ask them some visits. We would ask them, first of all, to sign a consent to participate in the study. Then, if they agreed to participate at that first visit, we would take a vital signs, including blood pressure, pulse, temperature, and weight. We would conduct an ECG. We would draw blood samples and ask the participant to also provide a urine sample. Then we would ask some questions about their medical history and any medications that they may be taking. We will also conduct a physical exam and a neurological exam. And then we would conduct tests to assess the participant's movements, how they're feeling, and then kind of everyday functioning, you know, overall feeling, overall general feeling. Then we would schedule the appointment for the subject to come back for what we call the baseline visit, and that can be within 60 days. So that has to occur within 60 days. So when they come back to the next visit, we would redo some of the assessments that I just mentioned again, and then we would provide the subject with their study drug. And then the coordinator and the investigator would speak with them about how they would take the study drug and provide them with a telephone number, and then they would call in, tell them when we're going to call them, and how the rest of the study would continue, of course.
Now, what about the dosing? How does that work?
Well, each subject starts out at 5 grams. 5 grams, and the study is packaged in a powder format, so they're in little packets. We would describe to the subject that how they would take the dose, so they'll take the 5 grams, and the goal is to get every individual subject up to 40 grams, so that would be a total of 8 packets per day. If they were not able to get up to that 40 grams, or if they're experiencing some sort of side effect, that we would work with each individual participant to alleviate those side effects. So perhaps in some cases the investigator may stop the drug temporarily. They may reduce the dose. They may prescribe medications to assist with those side effects. There's a number of things that we can do as a team to ensure that each participant is able to tolerate his or her own dose. Obviously, each of us have a different tolerability for drugs, and so we want to make sure that each person is treated as an individually, and we do work with them.
And this is Bonnie. I'm just going to jump in and say that, you know, people really are appreciative to have that kind of control. It really does make people feel like, okay, I do have a little bit of control over this. I'm not upsetting anyone if I can't get to the 40 milligrams, although many of our patients are up to the 40 grams, excuse me, of study drug. But just to have that control makes people feel a little bit better about being in the trial as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're forcing that down their throat. It's like if
right.
they can't tolerate, you adjust, and then you adjust again when they, you know, feel better. And so, right.
But
that's
we work with them.
Any type,
and any type of drug that anyone's going to give, you know, there's sometimes side effects. That is something that happens with medication and trial drugs and whatnot. So we do want people to know that, you know, it's not just a question of, oh, I took this and I'm having side effects, I'm going to stop, or we're going to reduce this right away. We really try to work with them to say, okay, you know, let's see if we can back it up a little bit, go a little bit slower, try to titrate up a little bit slower, and really work with them. So, you know, it's a little bit of cheerleading as well and holding people's hand to go through this. But again, knowing that they have that control does make people feel a little bit better about being in this study.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Now, can they be in other studies with this one as well?
No.
Or?
No, they cannot participate
no. okay.
in any other investigational study while they're on CREST.
But observational studies, there is a difference
That's correct.
Right. So an observational study is where people are coming in just to be observed, you know, in terms of defining that they're going to be asked questions, that they have an evaluation. As long as they're not getting any kind of investigational drug, as Karen was saying, then, you know, that we
okay.
want to make sure that what we're looking at is really only one thing and not a whole bunch of things that are happening to somebody because of being on different trials, different study drugs.
Right. So they could be in Enroll HD and be
Correct.
In CREST E
Correct.
At the same time,
yes.
or any other observational study for
right.
that matter. Okay, so who can actually be in the CREST E study? What are you looking for as far as subjects?
In order to join CREST E, subjects or participants must be age 18 or older. They should exhibit early symptoms of HD and a family history of HD, or early symptoms of HD and a CAG repeat of greater than or equal to 36. Women of childbearing potential, we conduct a pregnancy test to ensure that they're not pregnant. They cannot be lactating and must agree to use adequate contraception methods throughout the trial. In addition, we ask that they're not taking any other supplements, as particularly we do not want them to take any supplemental creatine while they're
yep.
participating in the study. Of course, so we really want to only be looking at, you know, the investigational product of the study that we're providing. We also ask that they're not taking Coenzyme Q at a dose greater than 300 milligrams a day in Canada and 600 milligrams a day in the rest of the world. They must stop these two medications 30 days prior to being enrolled in the study or coming in for their second visit, which I mentioned earlier. So when you come into the screening visit, you want to make sure that you discuss medications that you're taking with your coordinator and your investigator. Each coordinator investigator will review those meds with you, assess how you're feeling, and if indeed you are taking any creatine or CoQ, we would ask that we would give you approximately 60 days up to that time point in that baseline visit to stop that medication. In addition, we ask that subjects are ambulatory and not requiring skilled nursing care. And we don't have any other medications that we ask. It's primarily the CoQ and the creatine in this study. So that's a nice thing about this study. There aren't too many medications that you're required to stop taking.
Right. Are there any other exclusions that you know, can think of? Mm-hmm.
Exclusions are, of course, we don't want anybody coming into the study with any sort of history of any disease that may alter the results of the study. When people come in, if they have any questions or they're not sure, or then that what they would want to do is, if they're interested in the study, of course,
right.
We would assess each site coordinator would assess that information with them prior to coming into the office. In addition, we also have an 800 line for the Huntington Study Group that we certainly are willing
right.
to speak with each. And I have spoken with potential participants personally, and I'm happy to review that information with them as well or any other questions that they may have.
Number is 800-487-7671. That's the Huntington Study Group. And I would suggest people call there for CRESTI or if there's any other clinical trials that they might want to join as well. So it's a good thing to do is just to call Huntington Study Group because that's what they do. I'm going to put that number in the chat room here so people can call to find out what is
While you're
going
doing
on.
That, Melissa, I just want to jump in about one of the exclusion criteria. In terms of some of the issues that do come up with our clinic patients or people who call is, you know, any kind of history of use or abuse of drug or alcohol use. And that's really important, that we really do want to make sure that people are stable and that they're able to come in and be responsible, you know, for taking their study drug and coming in for the appointments. But on the flip side, you know, some of the people who I've talked to who have, like, a dual diagnosis of some alcohol abuse or use and Huntington's disease actually have been motivated to try to stop doing that. You know, people come to talk to us about Huntington's disease and hope and how they can be part of clinical trials all the time. And there have been people who have said to me, well, you know, I feel like there's no hope. And my feeling is that there's absolutely always hope, that this is a disease that if someone says to you, which I cannot stand when people say, you know, there's no hope for this, there's absolutely always hope.
I know.
And one of the things that, you know, when people say, well,
more
you know, I've
more now than ever.
Absolutely.
Right.
And one of the things
more
that people
now.
Say, well, mm-hmm. you know, there's just nothing that I can do to help. And, you know, I've been able to actually motivate some people to say, you know, you could be part of a clinical trial if you weren't doing some of this other behavior. And people kind of perk up like, well, what do you mean?
Yep.
You know, so it's a little bit of an enticement to get people to a point where they're, you know, clean, where they're sober to say, I want to be part of mm-hmm. something that's going to make a difference, maybe not for me, but in the future generations. And I think that really helps people a lot. Somebody like that.
Preach it, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Good for you. I'm glad to hear that you're doing that because, you know,
of course.
Our Huntington's people have the power to make a change, make a difference. And that's we can't do it without them. If we don't have HD patients as our subjects, we're never going to find a treatment or therapy or cure. So,
right,
you know,
right.
they're
what
our
say,
heroes.
Right.
They are the
what
ones.
What I say to people
absolutely.
Is,
absolutely.
Right, the researchers are, you know, in the labs, they're working with these animal models, and those are great starts. But, you know, cells in a dish and animals are very different from people. And we absolutely, like you said, we need the people to find the answers. And, you know, the people who are part of these these trials really do feel like they've been part of, you know, walking hand in hand with the researchers,
mm-hmm.
and we're so grateful for them. So absolutely, without people, we're not going to find a cure.
We need to honor that. We really do.
Absolutely.
Yep.
One of the other pieces that I think Karen was going to talk about as well is that this is a study that actually incorporates caregivers as well. Caregivers,
yes.
you know, are there as research proxies, meaning that if within this the period of time that people are involved in the study, if they do progress to a point where it's a little bit more difficult for them to make a decision, we have, you know, research proxies, people that are like caregivers that we ask them to say, you know, if there is a time where we feel this person shouldn't be taking creatine or part of this, we'll work with that person. It's kind of a person that the patient appoints to be like their mouthpiece, their person that's going to help them. But also just looking at, you know, the caregivers and the burden that's on caregivers. So when we do have people come in the first time, we interview their caregivers over different periods of time, not exactly the same schedule as patients, or we call them subjects. When they're in a research study,
right.
patients to me become subjects. So the caregivers also come in once, twice, or maybe sometimes three times just to say, you know, how are things going? And this is a great study because it's the first HSG study where we are, you know, looking at the caregiver burden. And the hope is, let me jump back, that there have been a lot of independent studies that have looked at caregiver burden. And what they have found is that sometimes with the motor disturbances, so some of the gait and balance and swallowing and movements and depression, those are things that really do cause some caregiver burden. And if we can
yes.
look and see if, you know, with the creatine, if that does reduce some of the motor problems, this might be helpful. But also we are really gathering information to say, you know, how can we help caregivers as well? You know, what are their concerns? And we're listening to them, you know, and listening to their voices. The more that they can communicate with us, the better it is going to be for the whole family. And, you know, I think that it's great that we're having these caregivers part of this. I really get to know the caregivers sometimes a lot better in the study, and it's wonderful to have that piece.
We are so happy to hear that because, you know, we all kind of have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as progression happens, you know,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more necessary for the caregiver to become involved.
Mm-hmm.
And why not, you know? It's a team effort, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's one of the benefits. Go ahead.
No. Keep going.
Just one other piece about the caregivers is that, you know,
mm-hmm.
specifically at our site, at UConn Health Center, we're really lucky. I mean, we have a five-day-a-week clinic. It's very unusual in the country, in the world, and it's great. And I know these patients that come in really well, but the people who are subjects, I really get to know them much, much better. And there's a really good, like you said, a team and a collaboration. And when
yeah.
that caregiver's involved as well, we get to know them even better. You know, we're seeing them multiple
mm-hmm.
times over a year, and, you know, we form this close bond with them that I really think helps in their HD journey. You know, and I mean, I have to admit, you know, I acted a little bit like a cheerleader, and, you know, again, it's trying to keep people in the studies and whatnot.
Yep.
But I think really just being involved, you know, gives the research subjects and the caregivers that feeling that they're really doing something about HD. And those are really are incredibly special people, and, you know, they're our inspiration and hope.
I have an awesome comment from a lady from Facebook. Is it okay for me to say her name? James?
How about her first name?
Yes, it is. Absolutely, yes.
Okay, Irene. Her name is Irene. She mm-hmm. says, I love this show. Thanks for having Karen and Bonnie educate us. I agree with everything that is being discussed.
Awesome.
Thanks, Irene. Awesome.
I'm getting quite a bit of conversation on Twitter, too. And if I might just say, Bonnie and Karen, I love hearing the inspiration in your voice, being someone who has something.
Thank you.
You're really passionate, and if we could bottle that, it
yeah.
would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we just did.
Yeah, I'd be rich. Yeah.
Yep, we just did. Awesome. I have a question regarding the dosing again. I'm kind of curious. How did you arrive at the dose of 40? Is it 40 milligrams?
40 grams.
40 grams. How did that come about? I mean, how did you determine that? Was that another study?
That, yes, that was determined in earlier studies that I mentioned earlier that we had conducted in HD. And when the earlier studies are conducted, that's how you determine a dose to test in future studies. So that was determined in earlier studies as we were seeing that it was that creatine is well tolerated. So in order to and to clarify, I mentioned that it is a goal for everyone to get to 40 grams. And you know, Bonnie mentioned the not everybody gets to 40 grams. And that's what the study's about. That's what we're trying to find out. The goal of the study is to find out is what is the highest tolerated dose.
Right. And I want to throw a little bit of a caveat. I just want to throw a little caveat just because I feel like it's my soapbox. So, you know, I think that that Karen mentioned that, you know, one of the exclusion criteria is not to be on a creatine supplement of over, I think it's 10 grams.
10, yes.
Yeah, but it's just so people know, because sometimes, you know, we talk to people about this study and they are concerned about, you know, if they are on a placebo or not, and I'm sure, you know, Karen and I can talk about that. Mm-hmm. But then they decide to run out to GNC and, you know, load up on creatine because we're looking at this. It is really, really, really important that people do not do that. This is a study that is a pharmaceutical-grade creatine or a placebo, but it's very, very pure. When you go to any of these supplemental stores or food stores, the FDA does not approve creatine, so we just don't know what's in there. Plus, we are following up with these people with, like Karen said, the blood work, with their EKGs to monitor their heart. It is really important that people just don't run out and try to get on, like, 40 grams of creatine somewhere on the Internet or at these stores. If you want to be part of the study, please give us a call and be part of it. If we can find out what the tolerated and the best dose is, then we'll get everyone on the right drug. But please don't just do this on your own.
Call HSG.
Yes, right. Yes, right. Please.
Get to the center or the coordination center of nearest you, you know, because that's why we're doing this study.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, absolutely. Katie, are you with us?
I am in here.
There you are. Katie, you know, Katie and her husband have done, I think, 4 or 5 clinical trials. And, you know, we were talking the other day about how to kind of keep clinical trials enrolled, because sometimes there's a little problem there. But, Katie, can you talk a little bit about how you did with the specific clinical trials and what some of the caregivers can kind of do for maybe retention a little bit. I don't know if you can talk about that.
Yeah, well, we've been talking internally at HealthReach International about this for quite some time. And I think the one conclusion we've come to is having a really good, strong plan for the clinical trial. And I know in the clinical trial my husband and I are in right now, HD Pre-Cell, we really had a plan of attack as far as knowing, you know, bringing food, bringing water, getting a good night's sleep, doing all that kind of stuff, and it really helped the day. It helped the day be a success. So I think having a plan is really important for us caregivers, and to talk about a plan with each other on how to make the clinical trial day a success. And if the days are successful, keep coming back, and retention will stay high, right?
Awesome.
Absolutely.
We take the stressors down. The stressors and behaviors down.
I guess I have a question for Bonnie and Karen. Have you seen much dropout for this particular trial, or have you retained most everyone?
We have. Our retention rate is not bad. We have had some people drop out, but the one thing that's really nice about this CRESTI protocol is that, as you all know, you enter a clinical trial and you decide you don't want to participate anymore for any reason, you have that right to withdraw from the study. But if you withdraw from the study for something that's not related to safety, let's say, then you decide further down the road that, you know, maybe I do want to go back on that study, maybe something was working for me, then you can call up the study coordinator and say, hey, I am really interested in coming back to the study.
Oh, that's good to know.
May I please come back into the study? Then the study coordinator and the PI will contact me and Suze, my other co-project manager, and we will discuss with them the strategies to bringing the subject back into the study. So, for example, we may bring them back on the dose that they were tolerating at the time that they decided they no longer wanted to participate.
That
Bonnie?
Is really good to know. Is that normal for a clinical trial to be able to receive them back?
Well, I can't speak for other trials. I know here at the HSG we do have that in some of our other trials here as well, that option.
Right. And I think just to, again, to piggyback on some of the other issues, it's really like what Katie said, a mindset. And I think that, you know, number one, knowing that you're doing something good, knowing that there are, you know, it might not be helpful directly to that subject, that patient, and the caregiver right then, but just knowing for future generations, I tell people to look at it almost like, you know, their participation in HD research. And if they can get that mindset, because, yeah, no one likes to go and have an EKG and cognitive testing and get on the scale and all that all the time. But, again, that this is, you know, to say that I'm doing this not just for me but for other people as well, maybe other people in my family, that if I can, you know, just eke it out for these couple of days, you know, and if you look at even over the 3 years or the 2 years or the 1 year, you're really not talking about that many visits, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And if people have to travel, yes, you know, we say let's try to, you know, we're going to try to be flexible. The team, the CRESTI team at the sites is saying, okay, you can't come in this day, we're going to have you come in that day, or mornings aren't good, you'll come after work. And we really try to be very flexible. So the more communication you can have with the team, the better off it's going to be for you, the better experience. And I think just, again, knowing that people really form a bond with us, and, you know, even just the research assistants where we are, who draw the blood and who do the EKGs, you know, they remember who has a dog and who has a baby and who has a grandchild, and, you know, it's almost like a socialization, and they look forward to that. So
they're family.
It is a mindset.
They become family. They become family,
it's very,
and you care about them.
We do. We care very much.
It's very therapeutic to be in a clinical trial. It's incredibly therapeutic, knowing that you're helping the future. And knowing that you get to see the medical professionals, you get to spend a lot of time, one-on-one time with them. It's been very therapeutic for my husband and I to be involved in clinical trials.
That's really good to hear.
That's great. That's great. And I want to mention that we talked earlier, Melissa, about the timing of the study. One of the appealing things about the CRESTI study at this juncture is that, as I mentioned, everybody will stop the study, enrolling into the study by December 2014. So anybody who enrolls in the study between January and April 2014 has 10 in-person visits, and we call them telephone calls, so 15 telephone calls. So the telephone calls are in between the in-person visit. The in-person visits are about a couple months apart. Those individuals that come in between May and August are in this study for about 16 months. And then individuals that come into the study between September through December 2014 are in for 12 months. And those visits decreased because we're stopping everybody at the same time point.
Right.
But I did wanted to make a point of saying that this protocol is also written such that we have quite a bit of communication with our subjects and our caregivers, as Bonnie mentioned. In between those visits, the team at the site would contact the caregiver and or the subject and discuss how the subject is doing, have they had any difficulties with the drug. You know, sometimes when you're in a clinical trial, and particularly if you're new to a clinical trial, you may be nervous about telling the study coordinator that you're having an issue with the drug.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. It's okay. We want to know that. We want you to pick up the phone and say,
right,
I don't feel good, or, wow, this is working great. You know, we really need to know that information in order to make this a successful for all of us. So, you know, please, we really, really want you to, you know, to stay in touch with us. And this protocol does allow for that.
Yep. That's fantastic. That's what this is. It's so important to have that communication, right?
Right, right.
With the families. Okay, we had another comment from Twitter. Valerie from Twitter, she says, I live in San Antonio, Texas, and she says, I'm glad you're talking about creatine tonight and the importance of not taking over-the-counter creatine. Mm-hmm. Too many of our people are doing this, and I always felt it was not best. I will be sharing your show tonight. Hello, Bonnie and Karen.
Hello, Beth.
Hello.
Good. That's great. That's great. We want people to be safe. We really do. I mean, and if this is prove, if this does prove what we hope that it proves, then this will be something that, you know, hopefully FDA would be approve it, or we would figure out the right dose. So, you know, there is a method to some of this madness, and it's number one, to keep people safe, and number two, if it's going to be an effective treatment, we'll make sure you know.
Mm-hmm. So then 50% are getting the drug, and 50% are getting the placebo, right?
Right.
That's correct.
And it comes in powder form.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Okay. The creatine is packaged in 5 gram of creatine and 2 grams of dextrose. So it's a sugar, so it's sweet. The placebo packets and the placebo packets appear the same, and they contain 7 grams of dextrose. And so why do we use a placebo? You know, that's actually a really great question. I know that, you know, this is something that we've heard from the community as well. Often at meetings and such, we hear people ask, you know, why are you using a placebo? Well, there's no standard of care for functional decline in HD, and we use a placebo to make the comparisons. So the placebo looks and tastes like, but doesn't include the active drug, and in this case, the creatine.
Mm-hmm.
And we would love to be able to give a drug, you know, an investigational drug to absolutely everybody. But that's, again, you know, you talked about the FDA. That's not the way the FDA normally works.
Yeah.
So in order for this, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but if we can have people working, you know, and saying, okay, I'm willing to take that risk, then, you know, we can get an answer quicker, and that would be great, because then, again, if this is effective, then we can, you know, the hope is that we will be able to prescribe this or give this to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, we have another comment.
Mm-hmm.
Or question, comment. Gary says, I went to my local health store. I asked them how pure the creatine is, and they said it's very pure. Is this just a selling point, and how can they get away with it? I trust in what you guys say. It is just sad that they will tell us that it's pure when it's not. When it's not what we should be taking. Very good. Yes, true that. Interesting comment.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, and again, supplements are not FDA regulated, and we tell people to be careful with all of these. It's really hard to know. You know, I don't have Huntington's in my family, and I do, you know, take different supplements, and, you know, you're not sure. But, you know, especially, and you know, I think that you can't fault the guy that you went to, because that's what he or she, you know, the person has been told, that it is very pure, and that's what they believe as well. You know, if you go and you talk to some people in health food stores and, you know, different stores, nutritional stores, they do believe in what they're doing, which is great. And I think there's a healthy balance of all of these things. But, you know, I don't think that anything on any label says take 40 grams of creatine. And that's where we really don't want people to get into serious trouble. You know, we have people who say, I want to go on creatine. I want to go on CoQ. I want to take fish oil or anything. And, you know, I think that there is everything in moderation. But do make sure that you tell your healthcare provider what you were on, even if you're not in a study, because sometimes there are drugs that interact with supplements and other homeopathic remedies. So do make sure you're being honest with your healthcare team in terms of this.
Very good. Okay, now is there a cost to the study? Is there a cost to participate, I guess is what I'm asking?
No, there is no cost to participate in the study. What we would do is we will provide all of these assessments to you, as I'd mentioned earlier in the program. And in the event that you are interested in participating in the trial and you might want to participate, but you're not sure whether or not the sites are, of course, you can contact the HSG. But you would also look on the HSG website. There's also some information on there as well. And that will tell you where all of the participating sites are located or centers that are conducting the trial are located. You can contact them, and they can talk with you about some reimbursement for travel is provided, and it's specific to each site based on what the regulatory bodies or their IRB at their site has approved for each of those sites.
Very good. Okay, so are you trying to wrap up the study? Why is it important now? Why are you wanting to get this done? Is it time to wrap it up?
No, it's time. No, there's nothing. No, it's time. The study would have ended, so we would be ending in December 2014. And because each individual may be up in the – no, you're correct. So every individual will be in the study for, as I mentioned earlier, 20 – from 12 to 20 months now. So the study has been ongoing. In fact, the study started on September 9th, 2009. So it's a long study. It's a very long study. It's one of the longest studies that's been conducted. And again, as Bonnie mentioned, it's very important that we obtain this information from our participants from a long-term study. Being a long-term study, we get to look at how each particular subject in the study is responding to the treatment.
And if people
rating scales and that kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Right. And in terms of the enrollment, if people say, I want to be part of the study, just to know that if you enroll, as Karen said, between now and in April, you'll stay in the study. You'll be on the study drug for the 20 months. If you decide to wait, it is going to be a shorter time that people are on the study drug. So if people are saying, you know what, I've got some time, I want to do something, I want to give back, I want to be motivated, I want to be part of the team that finds a treatment or perhaps a cure, who knows, then you know, it's kind of a little bit about just trying to figure out the right time to do that, and the sooner that you're on the drug, the longer you'll be able to stay on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what should people do if they want to participate in this trial?
Well, if you would like to join us in our trial, then we would like you to, again, the HSD study group has the 800 number, as Melissa mentioned earlier, and it's 1-800-487-7671. We also have an email or info@hsglimited.org. And we also have a website, so if you just do a search on the Internet for Huntington Study Group, the site will pop up. If you want specific information related to CREST-E, then you should be able to enter CREST with a dash E into the Internet, and the Internet will bring up the website that we have as well for the CREST-E study.
Oh, very good. Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry. On those websites, we list all of the participating sites, and we also list a contact person, so you can directly contact the site if you prefer to do that instead.
Very good. Now, we also have a Facebook page for HSG, and put it in there right now. We have 1,348 people in that group.
Oh,
I wonder if some of those folks might want to do CREST-E.
Awesome. We're happy
to plugging
speak
it
to you.
For sure.
We're happy to speak to you.
Please call HSG.
That's right.
Again,
sounds like a fundraiser.
Yeah, I know, right? It is, kind of, isn't it?
It is. It is cheerleading. It is. Yeah. But it's different. It's different than just saying, I listen to a program, so I'm going to give money. This is about people. This is about finding a cure.
Yeah.
This is about the future generations. And it's about that hope that, I think that if you can be part of this, then people are going to be part of finding a treatment.
Amen.
It's a lot of power, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I think that people who have been in trials that have completed that I've been part of say exactly that. It's like I've done something, and Katie, is living and breathing this. But people are saying, I have done something to help, and it motivates people to continue to do that. And again, to have that really good relationship. That sometimes people will come in for their visits to an HD clinic once a year, and will save up things. But when you're talking to people people, you know, every couple of months, or you have that ability to talk to them on the phone, you know, we can also, if there's something going on, then, you know, especially if you're part of a clinic like many of our patients are, then we can say, oh, you know what, let's change different meds, or let's have you come in to see the doctor or the APRN. So again, it really is almost this family and this check and balance that goes on. So it is about helping people right now and helping people in the future.
Yeah, and you know, it's a way of getting in front of expert care, as you stated.
Exactly.
You know, that is that is so valuable in itself, the fact that, you know, these study centers are, you know, right in the midst of expert care. So for those of you who, you know, may want to think about a study or trial in that way, maybe you don't have expert care in your local town or you know, area. This is really a good way to get in front of the best care that we have for HD.
Absolutely.
And we're, you know, we're leaving a legacy for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yay. I'm so glad you girls came on today and talked to, you know, Cresty is important. All clinical trials are important. But, you know, the more we have this communication, open communication line, the better. And the more we can, you know, support the caregivers, the better. And it sounds to me like you girls are, have a handle on this. I'm so happy to hear what you, you know, what you're doing. We're very proud of you. Keep up the good work.
Oh,
was there anything else that we didn't? Yay!
Oh, thank you. Oh.
Yeah. We can only do what we're doing with the patient, knowing that we have the relationship with the patients and the families. So, you know, we are inspired by all of you.
We can't do this without you, and we appreciate everything that you do for us.
Yeah.
We're all in this together.
Yeah.
Let's get together and eradicate this disease.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. That's a good one. Yeah, for sure. Is there anything that we left out? We had a lot of information here. We talked about the study visits when people go.
Yep.
I think we got everything, didn't we?
Yeah, we got a lot. And again, if people have any questions, just pick up the phone. You know, no question is silly or small.
That's right.
You know,
that's
we're certainly willing to speak to people about all of this and clarify information or just give information. So, you know, even if you're listening or are going to tune in another time and you know somebody who might benefit from this, just give them the 1-800 number. We're happy to go through all of this again with somebody one-on-one, and that's not a problem ever.
And if you're a former Cresty participant, you can come back.
That's right. Thank you.
Right. Good to know. So 800-487-7671, that's the Huntington Study Group. Call them. Get enrolled. Or email info@hsglimited.org. I think we'll go ahead and wrap the show, unless we had any other comments in the chat room, James.
No, everybody, I know we had someone saying thank you all for being there for us. It's just been a very active night.
You are
on
loved.
Twitter.
Thank you.
It's mutual. It really
loved.
Is.
Mutual, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And
thank you.
Karen and Bonnie, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. We can't live without you either, so just keep that in mind. Okay, so this concludes our show for tonight. Thank you, Karen and Bonnie, for everything, for spending this time with us and teaching us. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Come back and listen to the on-demand episodes. Find us on iTunes as well. Free downloads. Get the free app, Help for HD, the original mobile connection to education resources and information about JHD and HD. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, or go to the website, helpforhd-international.org. Don't forget the HSG Facebook page, 1,300 people for 1348. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. We will talk to you next week.
Thank
you. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.